Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting to you on the 30th of August 2014. My name's Hereward Fenton. Welcome to the show, folks. In the next 2 hours, we will be covering a variety of stories. We will have, in the second hour, a very important interview with Professor Garth L. Nicholson, an expert in chronic illnesses of a variety of kinds that have some things in common. Professor Nicholson has studied the effect of mycoplasmas and other low-level infections in causing a variety of immune disorders and contributing to conditions such as chronic fatigue syndrome. And he is also an expert in Gulf War syndrome, which, as he discovered, was indeed caused by infections that were induced partly by vaccines. There is a multifactorial aspect to this, so I can't say that these conditions are caused simply by one factor, but certainly vaccines were a major component of this condition that returning veterans from the Gulf War in 1991 experienced. The implications for other vaccines are quite strong, and in our interview today, Professor Nicholson will be explaining his understanding of that, and we'll be looking into the connections with vaccines and autism spectrum disorder, and also a connection with another type of rather obscure condition known as mitochondrial disorder or dysfunction, which Professor Nicholson has identified as being a very important factor in some autoimmune problems and potentially connected to the problems with vaccines. Now, this is actually a problem that has been identified by other researchers, and I've got other research that I've found, and I'm going to bring it all together at some point. But there's very solid research that comes from multiple sources that indicates that some of the most devastating reactions to vaccines are associated with mitochondrial dysfunction. Sometimes it's in cases where people have an underlying disorder that makes them more sensitive to damage from the vaccines. There may be other factors, but it's also connected to autism spectrum disorder. The problems here that people experience cut across different aspects of the body's physiology and systems, and what we find is mainstream medicine is incapable or unwilling generally to look at these problems. Professor Nicholson has published his work in peer-reviewed journals. It's highly respected. It is solid work, but most GPs, people working in the field that you'll go to, medical practitioners, simply won't understand it. And the irony there is that, you know, these days when people go to the doctor, a huge proportion of the reasons people go to the doctor are for chronic illnesses which do not have a clear treatment. Many of them are immune related, and many of them fall within the area that Dr. Nicholson has been researching and for which he has discovered very, very important information. But you simply won't be getting it when you go to the doctor. You won't find out about these really important things. And the reasons for that, again, they're hard to explain. It is certainly has a lot to do with the way in which government regulations and big business likes to control and corral all information processing and channeling people's buying patterns, channeling the way in which doctors sell drugs and controlling people's buying patterns directly through advertising. They're not really addressing important issues about what many of the chronic problems people are experiencing today are. Of course, vaccines is a huge issue in itself. But in today's show, we will be talking a little bit about that. But we're going to be talking about some very obscure areas of medical research, which I think you'll find very interesting. That's all coming up in the second hour. Now, in the first hour of today's show, I've got a number of stories I want to run through with you. I want to begin by talking a little about the new counter-terrorism operations that are taking place in Australia. Now, of course, Australia is in the spotlight in regard to what's happening in Syria and Iraq, because many people from Australia, many jihadists, are coming from Australia and travelling to these countries. And there, in some cases, some of them have been photographed holding up human severed heads and this type of thing. So it's really happening. I mean, people are really doing this. It's really hideous, shocking. But it's important to understand that the response to this from our government is going to be quite over the top. And this, again, is what we continually see when the government responds to threats. Often the government response becomes another threat that we really have to be aware of down the track. So let's just have a look at what the government is currently doing in Australia. And I have an interview here with Scott Morrison, the immigration minister currently in government in Australia, and talking to ABC reporters.
Well, what our processes, what we've put in place under these new arrangements, seeks to do is identify those who may be seeking to go and engage in what is happening in this bloody conflict overseas. And on this occasion in particular, our Customs and Border Protection officers have used their initiative and their experience to identify these individuals, and they've been turned away from those flights, and they obviously now go back into the broader system of monitoring and surveillance that we have connected up with our other agencies. And they haven't committed any crime or anything of that nature, so charges or being held in that context is not applicable here.
So they were under surveillance already? No,
they weren't actually. And that's why I'm saying that our Customs and Border Protection officers have done an excellent job in identifying a potential risk here and acting on it. And I think that showed a lot of initiative, but it's supported by the initiative we put in place. And we're putting 80 additional officers around the airport, starting particularly in Sydney and Melbourne. And that will be supported by a range of measures to bring forward e-gates over time, but doing that more quickly than had been planned, and to improve our biometrics operations.
So how soon will it be up and running at other airports?
Over the coming weeks.
Okay.
Over the coming weeks.
Impact is that going to have on everyone else travelling at airports?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, one of the things we changed earlier this year after the incident involving Sharif, because I should stress, when that Sharif incident took place, the same settings that were in place that day were the ones that we inherited. And we, you know, when something like that happens, you change. And what we did is we changed the instruction to customs officers from facilitation as a priority to security as a priority. Now, that was a big shift. And that means that on occasion, flights will be held. People will have to be unloaded. Baggage will have to be taken off, and that may inconvenience some passengers from time to time. But this is important for our national security, and it's so our border officers can do their job.
And what reassurances can you give Muslim Australians that they won't be profiling at airports?
I can give them the assurance that they are the beneficiaries of the laws and other measures we're seeking to bring in. In many cases, these are young men from their own community who are placing themselves at risk. And we've seen people go overseas, and we've seen some of them come back not wanting to have a bar of it any further. And I think they are a beneficiary of the sort of things we're doing, but we'll continue to do that sensitively. We have an engagement with the Islamic communities, but they are not the targets of this. I believe they are the beneficiaries of it, and they are the partners in this to ensure that all Australians are safe, and most importantly, their sons are safe.
Okay, Muslim leaders like Silma Iram, who spoke to us last week from the Muslim Women's Association, says the community needs more support. They don't have enough chaplains in prisons, for instance, that represent...
All right, that's probably enough of that report. Let me just play to you another clip from Channel 9 News, and we'll hopefully get a little more detail on what is actually taking place in the airports. Here we go. Just waiting for that one to load.
Border protection units will soon be installed in all international airports across the country after an alleged terror suspect was intercepted in Melbourne. It comes as Australia edges closer to potential airstrikes on Islamic State targets in Iraq.
Thousands of kilometres from the front line, but a part of the fight, Australia's Syrian community calls for help.
Abbott, take a stand!
Inside Parliament, the Prime Minister announcing new customs officers were already doing just that at Melbourne Airport.
These new units have already intercepted at least one person of interest.
Nine News understands the person of interest was male, travelling from Melbourne to Lebanon on Monday, and was travelling with at least one other person. 80 officers will now monitor all Australian international airports.
Madam Speaker, we know what these people can do.
What we didn't know is how close they had come. Our top spy today stepping out of the shadows with this sobering revelation.
Planning for a number of mass casualty attacks on our soil has been detected and the attacks have been thwarted.
When it comes to national security, Labor sees this as a matter above politics.
With Team Australia in order, the Foreign Minister is going global, joining US Secretary of State John Kerry in recruiting for an anti-ISIL alliance.
We want to build a coalition of support to stop this kind of terrorist activity, including among Arab nations.
Leading that coalition may require a greater military commitment from Australia. The Foreign Minister says a request hasn't been made, but reports in the US suggest one may come soon.
Well, isn't that interesting? You know, the hypocrisy of the Australian government, of the media, is just unbelievable, folks. As I discussed in last week's show with Mimi Alaham, clearly what is going on here is Australia is participating in empire building, and as has been noted there in that story, Australia will be assisting with airstrikes in Syria. There is a plan to carve Syria up. It's about destroying the sovereignty of that part of the world and controlling and owning it. If they were actually concerned about the problem, and it is a real problem, the jihadists are monstrous. I mean, they're not human, what these people are doing. It's extreme. It's a terribly disturbed phenomenon, which really does need to be addressed. But setting up special units in the airports to monitor people is pathetic. It's also a big brother tactic, which is going to restrict our own freedoms and which is going to be used against us. But moreover, it is utterly pathetic in terms of trying to address what is a real problem. Now, the real problem has been all along our support of and funding for quite evil, ruthless, psychopathic groups that are actually acting at the behest of the power blocks of the West. So a real step in the right direction would be to stop doing that. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. We're just heading to break. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Men and women of Earth, may I have your attention? This is Herewood Fenton, host of Truth News Radio Australia. You're invited to join the info war as we work to restore truth in media and challenge the dark forces which now dominate mainstream news. I'm calling on you, valued listener, to use your hard-earned dollars to help us smash the globalist empire. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe today. With Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herewood Fenton. Great to have you aboard today. And I do hope that you stay for the second hour. We've got a very important interview coming up with Professor Garth L. Nicholson talking about chronic illnesses, how they're caused, and also some solutions as to what people can do to improve their mitochondrial function. Very important research that he's done. And may I just take this opportunity to invite you to become a subscriber to Truth News Radio Australia. Very, very easy to do. You simply go to our website and click on one of the large banners that that says click here to subscribe, and you'll be taken to a page where you can join up. And if you join up for 1 year, you'll be entitled to get our wonderful TNRA T-shirt and a resource DVD for the cost of postage, which is about $7 within Australia, a little more overseas. And I do really urge you to have a think about it. Shows like this cannot exist without substantial funding. Now, without the listener contributing, what happens is the person who does the show does it out of the goodness of their heart, out of their own pocket, and it's very, very difficult to maintain that for a long period of time. But of course, you know, even more important than that, we need to understand that we need to create powerful media. It takes work, it takes training, it takes commitment, and as it gets better, we're able to reach more people. As I've improved this show, I've been able to get some really great guests on. And in doing so, it can have more of an impact. And our goal is really to make significant changes. We want to see a better world. So if you think about what the usage of money is in your life and all the things you pay money for, and then you think about an enterprise like this, which is telling the truth in media, how much do you think that's worth? I mean, you spend a bit of money on a pair of shoes, you buy a coffee, you go to the movies. You know, you spend a lot of money on discretionary things during your life. But do you spend money on something like alternative media, which has no presence, you know, it has no funding? Do you spend a bit of money on that? If not, think about it. Why? Well, maybe just because the opportunity's never come up. You know, maybe you've thought about it, but you've thought, well, I don't know how to make that happen. Well, what I'm doing is I'm giving you an opportunity to help make that happen right now, and I'm giving you my commitment that your money will be well spent, and that that I'm in it for the long haul, and I want to continue to improve and develop this show. So anyway, take a look at the site. If you're new to the show, take your time, think about it. Have a look at the site, have a look at all our interviews going back many years, and if you think it's worth it, if you think we're doing something valuable, just put your credit card details in, it'll only take a moment, and you'll be a subscriber. I'd like to return now to a topic we've been covering a lot in the last couple of months, and that's the topic of Israel and Gaza. And I've had some good discussions, some great interviews on this topic. Today I actually want to play a clip from a very important, very influential Jew by the name of Norman Finkelstein, who was interviewed on RT on the 6th of August, about 3 weeks ago. And the subject here that he's talking about is one which I've discussed a lot on this show, is the question of the Gaza rockets, the alleged Hamas rockets, and the response to that, which is the Israel's Iron Dome. Norman Finkelstein is a brilliant man and a fierce critic of Israel, and someone that Israel should rightly be very scared of, because he's a Jew, but he's a man with a heart, and he sticks up for the underdog. He gets very little airtime. He gets interviewed on shows like Democracy Now! And RT, but he is pretty much censored by the mainstream news. I'd like to play to you now a clip where he's talking about the rockets and the response to those rockets. I think his analysis and his insights in this are very, very important. Here we go.
So let's try to look at the bigger picture, if you'll allow me, to look at the whole issue of the rockets, the Iron Dome, and the tunnels to explain why what happened happened. Let's start with the rockets. Number one, there were no rockets. There were no rockets. a rocket conjures up some fairly formidable weapon. What did Hamas have? We know what Hamas had even without reading what's now being published. I knew it from the first day. Use common sense. In 2008-09, during Cast-Lead, they did have an opportunity to smuggle in before some Iranian, some Syrian rockets and missiles, okay? Smuggling that in, there were still only 3 Israeli civilian casualties. According to Amnesty International, only one house was almost destroyed. Now that's 2008-09, when they had an opportunity to smuggle things in. Now there's a blockade of Gaza. And there's also, in response to that blockade, Hamas has this tunnel system. It's a pretty effective tunnel system with Egypt. They're able to bring in things. Okay, fair enough. So you could say to me, okay, maybe there was an Israeli blockade, but couldn't they smuggle in missiles and rockets through the tunnel system with Egypt? Fair enough. But then in November 2012 is Operation Pillar of Defense. Whatever rockets they had at that point, they used during Operation Pillar of Defense. After Operation Pillar of Defense, it ends in November 2012. 7 months later is the coup in Egypt. The first thing Sisi did upon coming to power, he sealed the tunnels. So now there's an airtight blockade on the Israeli side and an airtight blockade on the Gaza, on the Egyptian side. What could they have had? It's a year since the Egyptian coup. They had nothing in Gaza to make weapons. So all they made in their quote-unquote factories in Gaza, all they made were these what they call now primitive projectiles, which are the equivalent of, as one person put it from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, he called them upgraded fireworks. So you hear in the press, wall to wall, from the left commentary to the right commentary and the middle commentary, everybody's saying the reason these Hamas rockets were ineffective was because of Iron Dome. Iron Dome. This magnificent, brilliant, genius, you know, invention of the Israelis and the Americans. That's what stopped it. That's so ridiculous. How can I prove it? I can give you mathematical proof, precision. 3 civilian deaths
right
before Iron Dome.
That's right.
In 2008-09. 3 civilian deaths after Iron Dome. Now bear in mind, so the conclusion is Iron Dome did nothing. If it's the same number of civilian deaths before and after, then Iron Dome didn't affect anything. It wasn't Iron Dome. The reason there were no civilian deaths is because these are not rockets. These are upgraded fireworks. Now, in fact, the leading authority on anti-missile defense is Theodore Postol at MIT. Postol was the one who exposed the fraud of the Patriot missiles, anti-missile Patriot missiles, that were used in 1991. Just like the nonsense about Iron Dome, back then they were saying the Patriot missile had a 80%, 90% effectiveness rate in knocking down the Iraqi Scuds. Postol examined the material, examined the information. What did he conclude? One, are you listening to this? One Scud, one, might have been this
one. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. We're going to break. We will be right back.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I've just been playing to you here a clip from an interview with Norman Finkelstein from RT. And he was just explaining there about the ineffectiveness of Israel's Iron Dome. And he was referring to the research of Theodore Postel from MIT, who had proven that the Patriot missiles were also ineffective. And I'll just continue where we left off there at the end of the break.
Based from its path because of the Patriot missile. Again, Postel examined the available evidence. He said at most, 5% of the Iron Dome anti-missile defense of the anti-missile missiles of Iron Dome reached their target or successfully neutralized their target.
Why create a dome if it's not really necessary, then? is it just all a show? Is that what you're saying?
There are two reasons. One, because if you recall in Operation Pillar of Defense in November 2012, it was the only thing Israel could show as a victory. Do you remember at the end of Pillar of Defense, all the people in Gaza came out in the streets and celebrated they had defeated the Israelis? So Israel had to invent a myth of some success. So the myth was Iron Dome. The second thing is, it's crude, it's vulgar, it's material, you know, Marxism, materialism, but it's also true, it's money. It's free advertisement for the makers of Iron Dome. So it's both the mythical element, the public relations element, and it's also the business element. But it was clear, anyone on the moment's reflection, Mona, how many times did you hear on the news, thank God we had Iron Dome because it prevented all the casualties like before? What do you mean like before? There were 3 civilian deaths in Operation Cast Lead.
Then why play into the theatrics of things and shoot fireworks?
Okay.
Why would fireworks, I mean the Hamas quote-unquote rockets. You know?
Okay, it's a good question, and that brings me to the last point, because they're very much interrelated. Hamas knew a new round with Israel was coming, because that's Israel. As Israel says, every few years we have to mow the lawn. So it knew there would be a new round. And Hamas adopted the Hezbollah strategy in Lebanon, the Party of God Hezbollah strategy in Lebanon. Namely, you start firing all of these quote-unquote projectiles. Netanyahu now has a PR problem. They are not deadly, though they are. They do cause problems for Israelis, you know, rushing to shelters. It does cause psychological problems, emotional problems, and not least of all, they do cause economic problems. Tourism, disaster. That's why Bloomberg flew over. You remember Bloomberg flew over and said, well, this is as safe as, you know, Israel is as safe as any American city, because they were having a tourism problem with these Hamas rockets. So Hamas knew you fire the rockets, there's only one way to disable them. You have to have a ground invasion. That's been the Hezbollah strategy. That you fire the rockets,
they'll come in, and then
they have to come in. So now Netanyahu decides we're launching the ground invasion. But one thing went wrong. He did not know about the tunnel system in Gaza and how effective it would be. What happened is the tunnel system is not vulnerable to bombing and artillery shells. So Israel could level everything in sight as the ground troops entered. The tunnels were still effective. And the Hamas soldiers were coming out, and they were better trained this time. My guess, I can't prove it, pure speculation, everything they were trained by Hezbollah.
But you said that they were sealed. Did you just mean the tunnels for artillery were sealed? And
No. The tunnels were apparently not vulnerable to aerial bombing and or artillery shelling. So you could demolish everything in sight, you can send in your air force, level everything, you can fire the artillery shells, they still survived in the tunnels. And so the Hamas fighters were popping out everywhere. And Israel now, for the first time since the Lebanon War in 2006, in the Lebanon War, Israel suffered 120 combatant deaths. And this is against the party of God, serious business, the Hezbollah. Here, to date, they suffered about 65 combatant deaths, which is more than half against little Hamas. So that was the Hamas strategy. You ask, why did they fire them? I think there was a calculation that the only way to disable these quote-unquote rockets was through a ground invasion. And then when they did the ground invasion, they got caught up against the tunnels. So now let me just make two other points about the tunnels, because it's important. We were told Israel had to stay in Gaza to destroy the tunnels because they were threatening civilians. They were tunneling under Israel. Number one, if Israel is allowed to send planes, tanks, and artillery into Gaza, freely crossing the border at its whim and will, why can't Hamas build tunnels under the border to Israel? Only one side gets to violate the border. Only Israel gets to violate the border. Hamas has no right to enter Israel, but Israel can, at its whim and will, enter Gaza? Is that the laws of war? Number two, let's say they had a problem with the tunnels. Let's say it's true. I mean, the tunnels into Israel. Mona, you cannot have forgotten that the first thing Sisi did when he came to power was seal the tunnels. Did he have to decimate Gaza to seal the tunnels? Why could Israel have done exactly what Sisi did? Seal the tunnels from their side of the border. Number three, what kind of earth-moving equipment did Hamas have? It had spoons and shovels. Did it have tractors? No. You're telling me, you want me to believe that Israel couldn't dig a wall deeper than the tunnels to prevent people from entering through the tunnels? It had nothing. This talk about the tunnels had nothing whatsoever to do with entering Israel. The problem was the tunnels in Gaza. You understand? Not the tunnels in Israel, but the network of tunnels in Gaza, which posed a military problem for Israel. Because even if it bombarded Gaza, even if it fired artillery shells, it still had a problem. The problem is combatant deaths. 65. More than half of what Hezbollah had inflicted. And so now, at the end, because the question, why did Israel withdraw? The answer, I think, is pretty obvious. The answer is they had entered Gaza, but they were still pretty much on the border, though it was still 44% of Gaza they entered. They knew that in order to destroy all the tunnels, they would have to go to what are called the built-up areas, the cities of Gaza. They had to go into the built-up areas. If they went into the built-up areas, that means using Israeli tactics. First of all, they have to destroy everything in sight in the built-up areas.
Okay, we'll just have to leave it there. A very, very interesting discussion there from Norman Finkelstein. I'll be commenting on that when we come back from the break. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and we will be right back. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Now, I just want to comment on interview there with Norman Finkelstein, because he made some very important observations about what really happened during this recent conflict with Gaza. Because, you see, the tunnels that we've heard so much about, the real threat to Israel are not actually the tunnels that are going out of Gaza into Israel. Because Israel can seal them up. They can identify them. They can find them. The real problem for Israel is actually the tunnels within Gaza, within the borders of Gaza. Now, why would that be the case? Well, that's the case because Israel wanted to invade Gaza, as they've done before. Ostensible reason being to neutralize the rockets, but generally, as Mr. Finkelstein says, they mow the lawn every couple of years, right? Well, now, because of this network of tunnels within Gaza, they can't simply bomb from the air and then clear the terrain in front of them and move troops in because of the tunnels. The Hamas fighters can pop up anywhere. So they might clear a whole area and move the troops in. Suddenly, the Hamas fighters will pop up behind the troops. And this is what happened. This is probably why 65 were killed. And this is going to be a significant PR problem now for the Israeli government. And according to Finkelstein's analysis, this was part of the strategy in sending the rockets across. I can actually see the logic in that. You know, I have said in previous shows that I thought those firing the rockets were actually in cahoots with Israel because it provides the justification for Israel coming in. Obviously, Mr. Finkelstein doesn't take that angle. I still have my doubts as to whether the actions of Hamas in firing those rockets can really have any positive benefit when you consider the number of women, children, old people killed in the most horrific ways. But I do think it's a very important alternative analysis and a very, very important observation about the tunnels. So we'll put that interview up on the show notes because it has quite a lot more in it. It's quite a long interview. Now, before we get to the end of the hour today, I want to actually raise an issue to do with vaccines, and we'll be talking a little bit about vaccines in the following hour. But this is quite a unique scandal that's popped up, and it highlights the extraordinary level of deceit from both the government and from the pharmaceutical manufacturers and the regulatory bodies like the CDC in controlling perceptions. And I have a story here from CBS. Focus Autism releases findings on the 2003 CDC autism study. Higher autism rate among African-American boys receiving MMR vaccine earlier than 36 months. Focus Autism releases their findings of a possible reduction in the sample size of a major 2003 study conducted by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The sample size reduction negates statistically significant findings from the study. A top research scientist working for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention played a key role in helping Dr. Brian Hooker of the Focus Autism Foundation uncover data manipulation by the CDC that obscured a higher incidence of autism in African American boys. The whistleblower came to the attention of Hooker, a PhD in biochemical engineering, after he had made a Freedom of Information Act request for original data on the DeStefano et al. MMR and autism study. Dr. Hooker has viewed highly sensitive documents related to the study via congressional request from U.S. Representative Daryl Issa, chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. Dr. Hooker's study, published August 8 in the peer-reviewed scientific journal Translational Neurodegeneration, shows that African-American boys receiving their first MMR vaccine before 36 months of age were 3.4 times more likely to develop autism after 36 months. Now, I'm going to cut to the chase and just try and summarize this in plain English for you. This is a very, very important development. The things that make it important. Dr. Hooker's study was published in a peer-reviewed journal. It's going to be very hard to smear that. Of course, it has happened in the past. Andrew Wakefield was published in a peer-reviewed journal and they ended up retracting it. I'm not saying that won't happen in this case, but it's difficult. It takes a huge smear campaign, usually against an individual, to get that sort of thing to happen. Now, what the doctor has discovered is that the original study changed the sample size, and in changing the sample size, they removed the anomaly that was in the data, in the raw data. Now, we can ponder endlessly about the meaning of this particular anomaly about African-American boys, but what's important here is to understand is that that information was suppressed. And it was suppressed by the fraudulent action of changing the sample size to eliminate certain people from the study and therefore change the results. And what's perhaps even more important to understand about this is that this study has been used again and again by the CDC as proof that there is no connection between the MMR vaccine and autism. In other words, this is a PR exercise. The study is a PR document that the CDC uses to prove its case. It was a CDC study, and the scientists concerned manipulated the data to get the result. You add up all those things, it's a very, very serious scandal. Now, I don't know what the true implications of this anomaly with African-American boys actually means. That probably needs further research. But, you know, so much other research has shown that all children are at risk. This is what Andrew Wakefield's research has shown, is that all children are at risk. And any information that comes forward that can substantiate the risks is extremely important. And we have to ask the question, how much else has been suppressed? How many other studies have had their data manipulated in this way? Hopefully this scandal will open the doors to more of these types of fraud being identified. Hopefully we'll start to see changes from within the system. Now, it's interesting to note that just in the last few days, there has been a story pop up on Australian media about a Nobel scientist warning that we must make sure that children are vaccinated. And it's kind of a scare story. I'm just going to play to you a clip here from the ABC's World Today. It's just curious that this has popped up at the very same time as this very serious scandal has emerged from the CDC.
A Swiss scientist who won the Nobel Prize for Medicine for his pioneering immunology research has issued a warning to Australians who are reluctant to vaccinate their children. Professor Rolf Sinkernagel says not only could old diseases re-emerge, but the effects of the diseases could be worse than when they were originally widespread many years ago. Professor Sinkernagel is also calling for more frequent vaccinations than currently administered under most vaccination programs. Rachel Carbonell has our report.
Swiss scientist Rolf Sinkernagel won the Nobel Prize for Medicine with Australian scientist Peter Doherty in 1996 for research identifying how the immune system recognises virus-infected cells. Professor Sinkernagel says current vaccination programs should be expanded and research into long-term immunisation programs against diseases like polio show why.
People who had been vaccinated some 20 or 30 years ago show a drastic decline of their protective level.
He says it's now thought that immunisations may work on a cycle of low-level reinfection rather than immune memory.
One of the polio vaccines was actually an attenuated but replicating live vaccine. And that vaccine circulated in the population and maintained by so-called reinfecting people at a very low level, maintained an active immune response that was protective. So the term immunological memory actually is a nice idea, but doesn't really explain protective immunity. And that has very practical consequences because it says if over time we reduce the circulating infections in the population, and why do we do that? Because our vaccines are so successful. And because hygiene measures have been very successful. So the circulating infections diminish, and suddenly we see, because of lack of re-exposure to these naturally circulating infections, that our protective level actually decreases and sometimes disappears. So
we'll just leave it there. That's actually quite an interesting observation, which I think needs to be considered. Aside from all of the other problems about vaccines, many of them being questions about their efficacy, the question is, if people are being exposed less to viruses, their natural defences are going to be reduced, and that in a way is going to actually make them more vulnerable. It's a whole other topic. We are going to break. I will be back at the end of the beginning of the second hour with our guest, Professor Garth L. Nicholson. Very interesting discussion on chronic illnesses and mycoplasma infections. Stay with us. It's going to be a really interesting hour.